I'm joined on the phone right now by Laura Carlson. She just wrote the article, Mexico's Dramatic Vote Count Lacks Credibility. She is director of the International Relations Center America's program in Mexico City, where she has worked as a writer and political analyst for the past 2 decades. And I'm very, very pleased to be joined today by Laura Carlson. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much for the invitation to be on your show.
Great. I appreciate you taking the time. So if we could just start off with kind of a rundown of what's happened in the last week or so. I understand that Mexico's vote count came in just about just over half a percentage point in favor of the conservative candidate, Felipe Calderón. Is that right? And give us some of the rundown on the whole thing and who's protesting this result.
Yes, it's been an amazing week down here. The results came in, first of all, in the form of preliminary results that showed a difference of about 2%, although they were not concluded, between Felipe Calderón, who's the candidate, conservative candidate of the National Action Party called PAN, and Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who's the candidate of the Party of the Democratic Revolution, PRD. These were suspended, and they entered into another vote count where they are allowed to open ballot boxes. They read off the tally sheets and open ballot boxes only when there's some instance of irregularity that's evident in the tally sheet. The results began to come in with López Obrador in the lead until about 4 o'clock in the morning, when Felipe Calderón caught up, edged ahead, and finally ended up, as you mentioned, with just over a half a percentage point of advantage. What's happened since then has been a series of events. From the very first, there were doubts about whether this count was actually valid or not. For one thing, many of the ballot boxes that the opposition, the PRD, asked to be opened were not opened according to the rules of the Federal Electoral Institute. In addition, the ones that were opened showed evidence of irregularities. What they showed is that the tally sheets were not reflecting the real vote count, and the vast majority of those were in favor of Felipe Calderón. So what's happened since then is that immediately López Obrador rejected the official results and has asked for a recount, and we'll be taking that to the federal electoral courts now on Monday, presenting evidence of the irregularities, what he's now openly calling fraud, in order to demand opening all the ballot boxes, or as many as possible, at least those in which there's clear evidence of irregularities, and having a ballot-by-ballot count.
Now, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
How was the vote counted? Was it counted electronically? I mean, how were people voting, and how was the vote counted?
Well, in the polling places, there's over 130,000 in the country. There are representatives from all the parties, and there's an official person in charge of the polling place, and they do the count after the polls close, and they put them on a tally sheet. It's not an electronic system. There's a tally sheet that's filled out by these people, and then the tally sheets are added up. The problem is that there was a difference in these cases between what was put on the tally sheet that was received by the Electoral Institute and then, when they opened it up, what was actually in the ballot box. So that's the major problem that they're looking at here.
Do you think it's an exaggeration, you say, that López Obrador of the Democratic Revolution Party, he is openly calling this fraud, whereas just recently he was just saying irregularities, voting irregularities. Do you think it's too extreme to say fraud took place in this election?
No, I don't think it's too extreme at all, because it would be far more than a coincidence that the kind of irregularities consistently, even the ones that showed up in that vote count, favored Felipe Calderón. And this comes on the heels of a lot of complaints about the way that the elections were handled. There were things even into the run-up to the July 2nd elections that caused people to doubt that the government was actually going to accept a victory by López Obrador. For one thing, there was a manipulation in the way that they presented the results of the preliminary count in order to create the illusion that Felipe Calderón was winning by a much larger margin than ultimately they recognized. There were 3 million votes that didn't go into that preliminary count, So immediately López Obrador said, what happened to these 3 million votes? And they said, oh, well, they're in a file of inconsistencies. When they finally opened up that file, it turned out that the vast majority of those votes were actually for López Obrador, and it narrowed Felipe Calderón's margin by a long shot, and it also caused a lot of doubts about the way that they handled that count. In addition, the government has been very involved in the campaign, which is actually prohibited under Mexican electoral law because government officials are not allowed to campaign in the course of their official duties, and especially President Vicente Fox, who's from the same party as Felipe Calderón, the PAN, the National Action Party, was very involved in it. And they've been also seen evidence that social programs, some of the government benefits that are given to poor people in the countryside in particular, were used to do vote buying and vote coercion. There was an independent study that showed that the people who received those benefits were liable to coercion of having their benefits cut off if they didn't vote a certain way, or receiving greater benefits if they voted in favor of the government party.
These are people.
So all these things add to the doubt.
These are people receiving government assistance that they would be they're subject to vote coercion because the government knows who they are and put pressure on them?
Yes, actually, the campaign manager for Felipe Calderón was the former Secretary of Social Development. So, of course, she has all those lists in every region of the country of people who received the benefits. And this is a tactic that, unfortunately, was very common during the one-party rule of the PRI, which is the Institutional Revolutionary Party. It ruled Mexico as basically the only party for over 70 years, and it was a tactic that was frequently used in elections in the past. So people are very wary of it, and they're very upset about it. There was, as I mentioned in this study, it was monitored before the elections, and the conclusion was that the public was susceptible to this kind of thing again, and there's evidence that that happened. This evidence can't be presented to the courts in the same way because it's not a direct evidence of how the count itself took place, but it's another factor that's caused the lack of public confidence in this very, very narrow margin of the July 2nd election.
So you have a situation where there was manipulation of preliminary results. There was omission of thousands of polling place results until after the opposition protested. You have vote buying and vote coercion. There was also complaints about people who waited in line for hours and then were told when they got to the polling, when they actually got up to vote, that their name wasn't there. Can you talk about some of the other problems that happened?
That's right. There were people who found that their names were not on the voter registration rolls, although they had their credentials. And this happened particularly in areas where they expected a high vote for López Obrador. There were other areas in which there were ballot boxes that reported more voters than were on their rolls. There were other areas in which people were shaved off the rolls, and then there were areas where the count, when they opened the ballots, just did not correspond to the tally sheet. Those are the kinds of things they're going to be looking into in the courts.
Can you talk about the backdrop to this whole thing? Maybe you can explain who the parties involved are, the PAN, the PRI, the PRD, also the kind of background to the situation. Who supports the PRD, the PAN, the PRI? Who are the ones, what segment of the population is supporting López Obrador, the left-wing candidate, and who is supporting the right, Manuel López? I'm sorry, wait a minute, the other one, Felipe Calderón. Who's supporting Felipe Calderón? And maybe talk about how the PRI, where they fit into the picture, and give the background, kind of the backdrop of the economic picture, which is a big part of the situation.
This is a very important point. Mexico now, even before the elections, has been split down the middle by this campaign. Felipe Calderón of the National Action Party was running on a platform to continue the same kinds of economic policies that we've had for the last administration, and before that with the PRI as well. Basically, these policies rely on the free market system to create growth and eventually trickle down to the poor in the typical sense that we've seen with the Washington Consensus. On the other hand, López Obrador was calling for a far greater involvement of the state in the managing of the economy, and especially in redistribution of wealth, in order to get rid of some of the huge gaps we see between the rich and the poor in Mexico. Right now, Mexico is one of the most unequal countries in the world, and over 50%, depending on what methodology you use, is of the population is living below the poverty line. So what we've seen, we're just beginning to get figures in from this election, but what we've seen is exactly what we expected, that the vast majority of the poor and lower-income people voted for López Obrador, and the majority of the people who are more well-off voted for Felipe Calderón. This also splits the nation geographically because they each won 15 states, which is exactly half. And in the north, where there's the states are wealthier, and in the central part of the country, Felipe Calderón won, and in the poor and more indigenous south, López Obrador won. So basically, we have a conflict that's very highly charged because the poor people, and we saw this very clearly in the rally that López Obrador called yesterday that I attended, the poor people are demanding social justice, which they say has been denied them for many, many years, that they've been getting the short end of the stick because of the way the economy is managed. On the other hand, the wealthy are saying that there will be instability or that there will be economic collapse if there's a new change in economic policy, and they're very firm in holding on to the kinds of privileges that they've had under the policies of the past.
And explain the policies of the past a little more in depth?
Yeah, well, the policies of the past can be encapsulated in the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, because basically they've opened up the economy, they've gotten rid of government programs that subsidized, for example, poor rural producers, the farmers in that produce for family subsistence and sell the excess on the markets. With the influx of, for example, corn, imports of corn, over about approximately 2 million farmers have been displaced from rural production. This is a large part of the people that we see forced to migrate to the United States, and that's why immigration has gone up so sharply since NAFTA went into effect in 1994. Other kinds of programs that supported consumers and low-income people have been dismantled as the states withdrawn from any kind of involvement, really, in the economy. And the free trade policies have had a major impact on the poor in this way, with very little of what you call trickle-down. Now we have five Mexicans on the Forbes list of the wealthiest people in the world. The privatizations, many of them made their wealth off of privatizations, like the privatization of the telephone company, which transferred a monopoly from the government to the private sector, and have benefited greatly from these changes. There's also a concern, and there's also been problems with the way that natural resources are handled under free trade, where the penetration of transnational corporations has led to those resources being used on the international market in such a way that the country itself gets very little benefit from it, and it's mostly the corporations themselves that are benefiting, and a very narrow political and economic elite that's allied to that system.
You talked about the conservative candidate and how he's backed by mostly the wealthy. That would be Felipe Calderón. Of PAN, is he with the PAN?
That's right.
And then the other candidate, the leftist candidate, Andre Manuel López Obrador, supported mostly by the poor and people that are kind of disenfranchised by the economic policies you just described that have been has been going on for a while in Mexico. Now, how does the PRI fit in? There was another candidate. Yes, he was a distant third. Roberto Madrazo, is that his name?
Yes.
Explain where he fit in, how he fit into the picture.
Well, that was an interesting part of these elections because the PRI basically fell apart. I think nobody expected that their defeat would be so pronounced as it was in these elections. The party went into the elections already divided, and it won a very, very small percentage of the vote. However, they will be playing a major role because the person who will now take the leadership of the party, since Roberto Madrazo has been discredited by his poor showing, has been playing very close to the PAN, and that is Elba Esther Gordillo, who's the leader of the teachers' union. She's one of the classic cases of the way the PRI manipulates the political system through its whole period of one-party rule. She runs the teachers' union in a way such that they have machines almost in the countryside, and they are able to control votes. They are able to, through a series of negotiations and relations, wield a great deal of power. The PAN has won control of Congress in these elections as well. And with the alliance that's being created now in order to maintain the PRI, there will be alliances between the PRI and the PAN, and that will mean that there will be a stronger hand for some of those more conservative policies.
Now, Robert,
so we're seeing a real change in the whole political map here in Mexico.
Now, Robert Madrazo of the PRI, he ended up conceding defeat to Calderon, the right-wing candidate, before the official results even came in. Why do you think he did that?
Well, that's part of the negotiation that's going to go on. I think he's trying to salvage what he can of his party, and that means negotiating with the PAN. Also, there's been a real conspiracy in many ways between the PRI and the PAN to stop López Obrador. Basically, that's the major objective of what's going on right now, and we can expect that to be played out in the next few weeks, if not months.
You're listening to 101.1 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm speaking right now with Laura Carlson. She is the director of the International Relations Center Americas program in Mexico City, where she has worked as a writer and political analyst for the past two decades. She recently wrote the article, Mexico's Dramatic Vote Count Lacks Credibility, which is located at the website, International Relations Center Americas program. You can go to americas.irc-online.org to find that article by Laura Carlson. She's joining me on the phone from Mexico City. So this is not the first time that there has been some serious questions about an election in Mexico. Can you talk about some of the past problems, particularly in 1988, and how that relates to what's happening today?
Many people are talking about 1988 today. What happened in 1988 is that Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas, who was the forerunner of the PRD, ran for the presidency against Carlos Salinas de Gortari. At this time, they began to count, and Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas was actually winning the elections because in that moment, people were so tired of the one-party rule and the policies that they were imposing on the population that he was able to construct a huge grassroots movement to get rid of the PRI. Well, when the system realized that Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas was winning, they announced that the computer system had crashed, and they ceased giving the election results. Until much later, when they suddenly said the computer system had come back on and that Carlos Salinas had won. Nobody believed this. There were massive demonstrations. There were assassinations of officials of the left that had been part of the Democratic Front. There were mobilizations to try to defend the popular vote, but in the end, Cárdenas himself conceded, and he never said it was a fair election, but conceded, and Carlos Salinas was president of the country for 6 years. People remember that very well. In Mexico, there's kind of a longer historical memory than there tends to be in the United States. And people are talking about it today, and they're especially disappointed because in the 2000 elections, the PRI finally recognized a victory of an opponent, and that was Vicente Fox of the Conservative Party. And they considered it a major step forward in a democratic transition here in Mexico. Now that Vicente Fox is presiding over elections and many people feel has done everything possible to avoid recognizing the victory of an opponent. They're calling him a traitor to the Democratic cause. In fact, yesterday's rally to hundreds of thousands of people, López Obrador came right out and called him a traitor to democracy and said Vicente Fox has benefited from the transitions and the efforts that the Mexican population has made to reach democracy in the last years, and now he has become one of the major factors to set that process back. And the only way that this can be fixed, the only way that the elections can be cleaned up, is to have a vote-by-vote recount, opening up those ballot boxes, checking them against the tally sheets, and finding out who really won this election. And the people there, of course, were absolutely convinced that if that's done, and if it's done fully and fairly, López Obrador will be declared the winner.
What do you think the likelihood of a recount actually happening is? You said that on Monday, López Obrador will actually officially call for this, start the process. Do you think that's going to be successful? What's the chances there will be a recount?
It's very hard to know right now. There certainly are precedents for this process. The courts have accepted cases in the past where they've annulled elections and had elections over again in two states, and they've also accepted cases where they've demanded that there be a recount in the polling places where there are obvious inconsistencies, and in some of those cases, the recount has reversed the final outcome. So there's a possibility with the rules and the laws that exist that this will happen. Of course, there's also a lot of political pressure for the courts to accept the case. And López Obrador presenting pretty strong evidence. They're calling for they're presenting at least 55,000 of the polling places with inconsistencies that would certainly merit a recount, at least in those places. And so there's certainly that possibility. This is being backed up by popular mobilizations in order to pressure the institutions to take the responsibility, because as one of the signs at the rally yesterday said, it's not just a legal matter. Unless you can convince a population that's this divided and that's this polarized that the elections were fair, it will be impossible for whoever's the new president to govern effectively. So there's a lot of political pressure. There are legal precedents. There's a lot of legal evidence. And we're hoping that with all this together, there will be a process where the legal channels will do what they're supposed to do and come out with an outcome that's satisfactory to everyone, which this one is so far not at all.
Has there also been a lot of grassroots mobilizing people in the streets, and what has been the reaction of the public?
Yesterday was the first big rally since the PRD rejected the official results that the IFE announced, the Federal Election Institute announced. It was just a gigantic rally. There were mostly poor people, but also people from all classes there who were using signs that said, stop the fraud, that said, we demand a vote-by-vote recount. At the rally, he announced that they will have this dual strategy of legal channels, going through all the legal channels. And he also announced that there will be continued mobilization. There's another one planned for the end of next week, also in Mexico's Central Plaza. There are committees on public education to talk to people throughout the country about what's happened with this vote, why it wasn't fair, why there needs to be a recount, and elections need to be cleaned up. And there will also, no doubt, be mobilizations in the different states. He's been very clear that he's not trying to resolve this issue in the streets, that they're going through the legal channels because they believe that they won the vote if the votes are counted fairly, and it's not a matter of causing social unrest in order to threaten the institutions. The point is to show this kind of support, to show that people are not, that the elections now lack public confidence, and to make sure that what happens in the courts and in the future process happens the way it should happen. He's also announced that there's a possibility of taking the case to the Supreme Court if the Federal Electoral Court result is unsatisfactory, not just if he doesn't win, but if it doesn't seem like it was done properly. So that's out there as a possibility, too. It's not entirely clear what the legal process for that is, since supposedly the Federal Electoral Courts have the last word on electoral conflicts. But he's announced that it's a possibility that they'll take it to the Supreme Court.
Even if there is a recount, you have the situation pretty much irreversible at this point of people who were had their names disappear from the rolls. There were ballot boxes that turned up in dumps. There was ballots that weren't counted. There was coercion, vote buying. There was blatant partisan involvement of the president and the federal government, which violates Mexican law, in the election. There was all these problems. Even if there's a recount, how can it be considered accurate, considering the level of corruption and things that went horribly wrong?
That's a big problem, because the rules themselves are very specific about what you can and can't do in the courts. And most of it has to do with only dealing with what happened on Election Day. We don't know exactly what the demands will be for the process. Some of those other factors, if there's a call for annulment, which isn't what's happening right now, are taken into account when you call for an annulment. Right now they're calling for a recount, and probably those factors will have to be cleared up in the future by looking at how to regulate more closely to avoid those kinds of problems in future elections.
Do you think if there is a recount that Lopez Obrador will be determined the winner if there was a vote-by-vote recount? He was leading, correct, in the polls prior to the election?
Yeah, the polls are a problem, too, because many of them have really specific political alliances, but those were the indications, right, immediately before the election. As I say, it will take a lot for the Mexican electoral system to restore public confidence in the vote, particularly if they come out in favor again of Felipe Calderón, because of the anomalies that the supporters of López Obrador have seen. But for now, people are still hoping that that can happen.
And I'm sorry, do you think that he would be the winner in a recount, or
would
you rather not speculate?
That would be speculation on my part, because I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think there's certainly very good reason to think that. López Obrador did not call himself the victor in yesterday's rally, but both he and his supporters said that they're quite confident that they won. And in my opinion, it's more than possible.
Just have a couple more questions for you. I want to talk about how the media played into this. You mentioned in your article, again titled "Mexico's Dramatic Vote Count Lacks Credibility," at the website of the International Relations Center, IRC America's program, americas.irc-online.org. You talk in your conclusion to the article about how the mainstream media in Mexico really has kind of jumped on the right-wing candidates' bandwagon. Can you talk about the media, how they've been handling this there?
In Mexico, there's, as in the United States, the media is highly monopolized. And in fact, they just passed a recent law that affirmed and gave even greater powers of monopoly to the media. There are two television stations that are really media conglomerates that can control a large part of it, and they were very biased in their reporting throughout the elections. The media is becoming to have a much greater role in Mexico elections as people have more access to television. Radio is important as well. And there was a lot of problems in terms of any kind of objectivity, which basically didn't exist. It's a concern, again, that people would be taking off. There's still efforts to try to get rid of the law that granted them even more monopoly powers and try to go back to a system that regulates a little more how the media handled the elections. One of the problems, too, was the content of the spots and the reporting and that kind of thing that went on the elections, because Felipe Calderón ran a real campaign of fear. Instead of talking about the positive things that he was proposing to do for the country, almost all the spots were directly pointed at convincing people that if López Obrador became president, things would, in effect, fall apart. The slogan of the campaign literally was, López Obrador is a danger to Mexico. This is prohibited by Mexican electoral law. There's a law that says that no campaigning can be done strictly on smearing the opponent, that the purpose of an election is to inform the voters, to describe to them what are the differences in the platforms of the candidates so that they can make an informed and educated choice as to which they think is most convenient for them and in their better interests of both their families and their nation. But this is not what happened. And Mexican citizens deserved more at this point when they've been trying to create a democracy and have worked hard toward that for the last couple of decades. Instead, what they got were comparisons of López Obrador to Hugo Chávez, accusations of reckless populism, and this campaign that he would be actually dangerous to the country. The business community entered in wholeheartedly to this. They ran full-page ads in the newspapers and spots saying that if López Obrador became president, there would be a major economic collapse again, that we've had stability recently, and isn't that what we all want, that were unfounded in many cases, because in effect, although I've said that there's a difference between the way that they would handle the economy and the way that they see national development, López Obrador is not calling for a complete change in the economic model. His proposals have been relatively moderate in that sense. They're very center-left, not left. And he's called for a renegotiation of some parts of NAFTA, but just certain clauses. He said he would sustain NAFTA as a whole and would sustain much of the openness of the Mexican economy, the liberalization that's taken past. What he's basically saying is that what he will not sustain are the privileges, both legalized and illegal, that the rich are gaining right now, which include tax evasion and subsidies that go more to the wealthier parts of the economy than the parts of the economy than the people who are poorest and most needed.
So the media has been very biased in its coverage of the campaigns. But what about once Calderón declared victory? Then what happened then in the media? They just didn't question it, correct? They just kind of...
Right, and actually it was premature because the elections have to be certified by the courts. They're not certified by the Federal Electoral Institute. So it was premature to say that he'd absolutely won the elections. In addition, we had this problem with the preliminary count. They were already basically announcing him as the winner when there were still these 3 million votes that simply hadn't been added in. So they've been looking to create a sense of in a situation of uncertainty, they've been looking to create this illusion that Felipe Calderón is already the president-elect. They've been bringing forth, and this is some newspapers and some media more than others, but this is in general the largest and most mainstream media. They've been bringing forth his programs as if this whole division and this challenge didn't exist.
This is also reminiscent of, you know, the elections here in the United States in 2004 and 2000, where, you know, the media basically declared victory for Bush before, you know, everything had been said and done. The corruption, the similar problems with polling places and electronic voting machines, all kinds of questions about the validity of the elections here, corruption with politicians being involved and making decisions and calling shots who were very biased, like Catherine Harris in Florida. Do you see any parallels between this? And if so, is there any good reason to make them, or is that kind of pointless?
No, I think there are parallels. The things that you just mentioned are similar in both cases. Of course, Mexico is a straight majority. There's no second round. And system of elections with no electoral college, so there, in the technical details, there are obviously differences, and in some of the specific ways that the fraud was done, there are differences as well, but there are definitely parallels. What, of course, we're hoping right now is that the Mexican citizenry can accomplish what the United States citizenry did not, and that is to count the votes.
Mm-hmm. The system, both there and here, seems so extremely corrupt, the whole process. I mean, I'm not saying that there isn't some transparency and some, legitimacy, but there is some serious questions about what appears to be extreme corruption and manipulation of this of the electoral system, both in the U.S. and in Mexico, and I'm sure in many places. But the reaction of a lot of people is to say, you know what, I'm not going to vote. This is pointless. It's just a ruse. It's a distraction. It's an illusion. I'm going to do other things, and I'm forget it. Forget voting. So what's the hope? And what would you say to people who would have that, I think, pretty natural reaction to all of this?
Yeah, there's that. That's a big problem. In Mexico, in this particular election, 59% of the registered voters voted, which is a pretty good turnout. It's not a record turnout, but it's a good turnout. And it was because they did see a chance for change with these two candidates, or particularly because of the difference between these two candidates. However, if the vote confidence is not restored in the vote, then maybe many people will be turning away from the system. In some ways, there are advantages and disadvantages to that. The other campaign that the Zapatistas have been running from the beginning was saying, with things the way they are, you cannot trust the electoral system to really resolve the profound need for social change in Mexico. And therefore, although most of the time they didn't openly call for abstention, they began this process of kind of knitting together the people who've been excluded from the benefits of the policies currently in place in order to form a stronger grassroots movement that would be able to make change in other ways besides just the representative system of the electoral vote. That's a positive process in itself. On the other hand, it'd be very negative if people were so disillusioned with the entire voting system that they no longer felt that it was a channel for expressing the popular will. Because, like it or not, the party system and the voting system are needed in a society at some point in order to create the kinds of changes that people need. So we're hoping that if public confidence is restored, those two processes can continue to grow, as well as trying to look at some of these, where it went wrong in the electoral system and what kinds of laws and new laws and regulations are needed that can control the power of the media to distort the process, that can control the power of the institutions to be influenced or even manipulated by the government itself, the administration in power, or by the business community, that can close up some of these loopholes so that people feel that it's a legitimate way to express their feelings about where the country should go.
I just have two more questions for you today, Laura. What is it going to take for confidence to be restored? Is it even possible, and what will it take?
If there's a recount and all the ballot boxes that the PRD is asking to be opened are opened and counted, then it's very likely that that would restore confidence in the system. In addition, there would have to be a recognition on the part of the authorities that it did not work the way it was supposed to work, and that there needs to be a lot more work done on creating these institutions so that they are more responsible to the entire process and not liable to manipulation. So it's a two-part process of building up the institutions, having some self-criticism on their part, which we haven't seen any of yet, and being sure that strong political parties or economic interests are not going to be able to have undue influence in it.
And maybe some independent investigations into some of the things that happened as well.
Yes, that would be absolutely necessary. Right now there are non-governmental organizations and citizens groups that have been doing that for a while. They have the capacity to do that. So it'd be very, very important for them to continue to do that and for the government to take into account the results of their investigations and look to see what policy changes have to be made. Other than that, it's a work in process. I can't give the answers, and probably no one person can give the answers. But it would require that all of civil society be involved some ways in really analyzing what went on in these elections and how to avoid it in the future. In the case, especially when the society is so polarized about the future policies, and when the vote itself is so narrow, it's always a difficult situation for a political system to confront a split with such a narrow difference as this one. But if we were to get to a point where those institutions had public confidence and they were stronger and more transparent than they are now, it should be possible.
And my final question is, what can American U.S. citizens, do about this, and why should they care?
It's important that they support the call for a recount, because only with a full and fair count can we be sure of the outcome and can we restore public confidence here in Mexico in what's happened. So that's very important, that they not accept some of what the press and media is saying, that this is already a done deal, that they respect the fact that there are millions of Mexicans in the streets and in their homes who are not satisfied with the results because they feel, and they have reason to feel, that there's enough evidence of fraud that this election has not been full and fair, that they respect that process, that they not fall into the trap of what also some of the media is selling, that López Obrador is just trying to cause civil unrest because he won't desist until he's declared president, whether he won or not. That's really not what's happening here. And that they allow the processes to continue on without interference. The major thing is to avoid interference, whether in the form of media pressures or the types of interference we see so often from the State Department lately, like the National Endowment for Democracy, the Republican Institute, coming down, getting involved in partisan politics in foreign countries, trying to provoke an outcome that's convenient to their interests. The least the United States can be involved as a government in these kinds of processes would have to do with national sovereignty, not only in Mexico, but in other countries as well, where we've seen problems of U.S. involvement in electoral processes and in the partisan system. The least they do there, the better.
I've been speaking with Laura Carlson. She's in Mexico City. I've been speaking with her from there by phone. She just wrote the article, Mexico's Dramatic Vote Count Lacks Credibility, which you can read at the International Relations IRC website, the Americas Program, and that's americas.irc-online.org to read her article. She is the director of the International Relations Center Americas Program in Mexico City, where she has worked as a writer and political analyst for the past two decades. And I'd like to give you an opportunity, Laura, to just give any final thoughts that you may have before we end today.
Mexico's at a critical moment in the history of its democratic transition. In order for that transition to move forward, it's going to be very important to restore confidence in the electoral system, which was eroded during these past elections. A recount is one of the only ways to do that, and respect for civil society's concerns and for taking this through due process is what needs to happen now. We're going to be watching the situation very closely and be happy to report it. You'll find future articles there on the website, and everyone's waiting to see what happens next.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Laura. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, George. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Again, Laura Carlson, of the director of the International Relations Center Americas Program in Mexico City. You can read her article, Mexico's Dramatic Vote Count Lacks Credibility, and other articles about this issue at americas.irc-online.org. That's americas.irc-online.org for the International Relations Center America's Program. Thanks so much for listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM and streaming online at freakradio.org.